8 o'clock. Now, scientists involved in one of the biggest studies of COVID-19 infections in England say the second wave has reached a critical stage. The government-funded study by Imperial College London suggests nearly 100,000 people are becoming infected in England every day. And the number of people infected is now doubling every 9 days. Professor Stephen Riley is one of the scientists behind the study. He says action taken so far to contain the virus isn't enough.
It's very difficult to get this epidemic to reverse and at the same time to only have minimal impact on people's social life and on the economy. And it's, you know, it's a terrible set of decisions that our politicians have to make. I think the data that we're presenting today does motivate a reconsideration. I'm sure that alternatives are being considered.
Yeah, that's Professor Stephen Riley there, one of the scientists behind that study. Now, hospitals here in the Northwest are currently caring for a third of England's COVID patients. At some hospitals in the region, one in four beds are being used by someone fighting the virus. Let's speak now to one of our regulars, Dr. Angela Abbasi, who is a senior clinical lecturer at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Good morning to you, Angela.
Morning.
Really good to have you on again. Thank you very much for joining us. Now, it looks like the second wave of coronavirus is taking its toll on our hospitals. Warrington Hospital, for example, is now treating more COVID patients than at the peak several months ago. But surely, Angela, we're better prepared this time, aren't we?
Definitely. As usual, you are right. We've learned a lot from the first go round. We've got better procedures in place. You know, we've got better treatment routines. The teams are more experienced. You know, I think we did well first time round in terms of preparing the NHS. And what we've done now is just building on what we did well then and learning lessons. So, you know, I see the teams working. And I'm really impressed.
Now, I don't know about you, Angela, but I'm one of those people that says it's never too early for Christmas. But quite rightly, people starting to think about Christmas, but it's too early to say what COVID rules will be in place by Christmas. The Environment Secretary has said that. Now, what's your thoughts? You know, it's only 8 weeks away, Angela.
Well, you always do this. You say it much better than I would say it. And I always then think, well, I can go and have a cup of tea now because he's already made my point. But that's exactly right. It's too early to say. But what I can say is that the decreases that we've seen in Liverpool, which are likely due to people really trying to stick to the new restrictions, are making a difference. And so, you know, what we can do to give ourselves the best chance of a more relaxed Christmas is to stick as firmly as we can to the regulations now.
Now, we were talking just before the news at 8 o'clock about France about to go into a full lockdown. Nottinghamshire, its move into Tier 3 has been delayed until Friday. And we now include the entire county of Nottinghamshire. You know, comparing us to other countries where they are looking at full lockdowns, we have this tiered system. What's your view, Dr. Angela? Is the tiered system working?
Well, you know, it's like I said, you know, a moment ago, we have seen some really quite encouraging declines in the number of cases in Liverpool. The number of positive cases per number of tests, the number of actual COVID cases being identified. So the positivity rate and the absolute numbers are all going in the right direction. So that gives me hope that the tier system is actually, you know, having an important impact. And, you know, it goes back to the point I think I made the last time we were on, which is that what we've now got the benefit of is this very localized epidemiology. We have the surveillance systems that we have now are so much more sophisticated than they've ever been, and it does give us this opportunity to put in local procedures, because the tighter the lockdown, the greater the economic harms, and it's walking that fine line between lockdowns that are so severe that they put you know, that they affect the economy and they affect livelihoods, and lockdowns that are, or procedures that are too, that are so relaxed that people begin to get sick, and as we know, amongst the very vulnerable groups, then they die. So trying to do this tailored approach, it seems like it's really worth the effort, and it does seem, certainly in Liverpool, to be having an effect. But I wouldn't want us to be complacent. You know, I think if the numbers begin to rise, we might then end up taking the more extreme measures that we've seen in other settings.
I mean, you seem to be saying to me, Angela, that it is good news that things seem to be working here in the Liverpool City region, but if it went the other way, and even if other parts of the country in Tier 3 went the other way, are you saying then that the best next course of action would be a Tier 4 or Tier 5 rather than a total national lockdown?
So from my position in Liverpool, I can't answer that question because I don't have all the data. And that's the thing that I think I spoke to you, mentioned last time, is that I was really impressed by that national overview that was presented at the press briefing. And I think it's those people with that bird's eye view that can make the judgment as to whether we need to go national or whether the local procedures are working sufficiently. And every time you do something to protect somebody else, so every time you wear a mask, every time you wash your hands, you are making a contribution to getting us a more relaxed Christmas. And I think I can't emphasise that enough, really, that these are things that we as individuals, you know, the people of Merseyside, can do a lot to make a difference.
Yeah. It's in our own hands, isn't it, Angela?
It's
in our own hands. Now, last week, the government reported that the increased risk of infection and death from COVID-19 amongst people from ethnic minorities could be explained by factors such as occupation, where people live, their household, pre-existing health conditions. What were your thoughts on that report, Angela?
As you can imagine, I read this report with relish. This is just the kind of research that I am really interested in. And I looked very carefully at the data that was presented. This is the Badenoch report that you're talking about.
Yeah.
I found really that what was summarised in there was not vastly different to what I was saying the very, very first time I came on, which is that even after you adjust for age, and remember age is the very biggest risk factor, adjust for households, adjust for household makeup, adjust for residence, adjust for comorbidities, there is still an excess of illness and morbidity, death really, amongst people from some minoritised ethnic groups. And so the report is saying that a lot of the risk, we know that people from minoritised ethnicities are more likely to fall ill and they're more likely to die. A lot of that excess risk is accounted for by, you know, these factors, comorbidities, household, residence, but not all of it. And I had, as you will not be surprised to learn that I've got this report in my hand, and on page 17, you know, there's a really nice graphic that shows that even after you adjust for all of these things, there is still an excess morbidity. And we don't yet have the answer as to what the cause of that is. And people like, people who've been thinking about issues of race and ethnicity for, you know, a number of years, these very respected institutions like the Public Policy Forum, would say that actually, even if you, the Institute for Public Policy Research, even if you were to think about those things like where people live, the jobs they do, some of the differences between white people and people of other ethnicities are already driven by the processes that cause barriers that make things easier for some groups and more difficult for others, which we call and think about as structural racism. So it's a very the news is not new. It's just that the slant seems to be slightly different. But when you look at the data, the gap is still there. And so we then need to ask the question, well, what is causing that? And the thing that I really welcome about this report is that it's very recommendations focused. And so on the back of this report, there's a recommendation that, okay, there is still this gap once you take into account all these other issues, which might be due to structural racism. Let's do the research to find out. There is this excess poor outcome for these groups, these different ethnic minorities. Let's reach out to those communities and find out how we can help. So there's lots of practical recommendations from this. And one of the most important ones is actually just collecting the data. You know, having ethnicity recorded on death certificates and in health interactions that will help us understand this these differences. So I just am delighted. You know, I might not agree with some of the public statements that have been made about it, but when you look at the actual data and you look at the recommendations that come out of that report, you know, I really welcome it.
Dr. Angela, you've been an absolute star with us. You've come on several times, and we really appreciate your time. You've almost become part of the team here on the on the breakfast show. Last time you were on with us, you had a short poem. Please tell me you've got another one for us today.
I do. So this is, I'm not sure it's entirely qualifies as a poem, but it's by Labi Sifri, who many of your listeners will know for his song. You'll associate him with the song So Strong, Something Inside So Strong. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, absolutely.
What people don't always know is that he also wrote It Must Be Love, which is the song that most people associate with madness.
Right,
that
yeah.
Lovely, lovely song. Anyway, so what he's done is he's taken a journalistic quote, which I'm sure you will all be familiar with, and turned that into a little bit of a poem, and it goes like this. If someone says it's raining, oh, have you closed your eyes? Are you listening?
Yes, I've closed my eyes. I've definitely closed my eyes. Yeah. I'm ready for this, Angela. I can't wait.
Okay. So if someone says it's raining and another person says it's dry, it's not your job just to quote them both. Your job is to look out the window and find out which is true. Facts exist. Details matter. Facts and details are often a matter of pain, well-being, life or death. And I hear those words when I'm doing my research. It's one of those, it really matters that we get to the bottom of things. It really matters that we understand why. And I think that's one of the gifts of this year, this awful year that's been so difficult for so many people, is that understanding the facts and details, the matter of the pain, well-being, life or death of different vulnerable groups, ethnic minorities, older people, and how our health system is working or not working for those people is suddenly really important. We are having these discussions. There's money being put forward, resources being put forward into answering these really important questions, and I'm really grateful for that.
Do you know what? I'm probably getting into trouble for saying this, but I think we all listen far too often and pay notice to politicians when we should be paying notice to people like you who deal in facts. And that's what we need in a time like this, isn't it, Angela? Facts are important, and that is your business, clinical facts. And we really appreciate you for it and all the work that you and your colleagues are doing at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine. Dr. Angela Abbasi, thank you. We look forward to having you back on the show again in the future. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Oh, right. Yeah, absolutely. Facts are very, very important. And Angela Abbasi is a woman who deals in facts. Somebody else who always deals in facts is Jenny Lee Summers.